This is my Dark Souls 2 diary. I wasn't planning on making this like I did with my Dark Souls 1 diary, so instead of a whole bunch of individual recordings made after a play session, you have one big rundown of my path through Dark Souls 2 and things it may think. I was worried that I wouldn't actually finish Dark Souls 2 after hearing about it, because on the one hand, it was heavily criticized by fans, so I saw it as important to give it a try, but recognized that I was allowed to bail it any point. One of the things I find more odious about this kind of cultural obviousness is that there is a unpleasable grouping of commenters about Dark Souls where it doesn't matter what you do or how you do it, they will wind up saying that you didn't do it well enough or properly enough to be able to comment on it. These people are idiots. I started out playing a sorcerer. I thought after playing Dark Souls 1 heavily focused on melee with my pyromancer, who I picked up because I thought pyromancy sounded cool, I would try a bit more ranged build. Turns out that didn't last. I killed the opening area ogre, got a stone ring. That's the only really crucial thing I can remember doing as a sorcerer. Around about the time I got to Majula, I'd heard about power stances and I thought that sounded really cool, so I started dual wielding daggers just because they were the only thing I could dual wield. I thought that was a really interesting way to play and I tried that out for a little while. The first thing that really stood out to me as I was playing was this area straight in the Forest of Fallen Giants where there's a Heidi Knight sitting on the ground and a group of dead corpses all sprayed around the room and an archer up high taking pot shots at you. First, I loved that this told a little story. The idea it projected to me was the Heidi Knight was clearly the most badass thing in this room, and every time the soldiers got up to have their fight, the Heidi Knight put them down again, and that was just this loop that they'd been stuck in for God knows how long. I also liked it mechanically because it was an area where you could kind of pick how you were going to do things. You didn't have to fight the Heidi Knight. You didn't have to try and engage the hollows on open ground. You could try and chase up to fight the archer and then shoot from above if you wanted to, or you could use the tree in the center of the room and keep the archer on the far side of that to you. I thought that was really nice. I took a really methodical path through this entire area of the game. I was very, very careful about what I fought and when. I would kill things, feel, I didn't do a good enough job of that, go back to the bonfire, and come back and kill them again. Just to make sure I was really, really certain I knew what I was doing. This had a side effect of depopulating the area and getting me very rich on souls, all while I still had my first humanity. I wound up avoiding dying a lot just by dint of being so, well, thorough. I liked the way that the environment became part of the interactions I was having. You can use torches to change the boundaries of where you can confidently move, and I liked the open quad in the Forest of the Fallen Giants with all the archers on it, where you can like dive down and fight through it from a lower level while taking fire, or you come at it from a higher point and shoot down into it. And that was really interesting. I liked that. I also liked that you could lure the Turtle Knight into smashing barrels and destroying itself, or you could lure it into smashing through walls and making you a shortcut. That was cool. I realized around this point I didn't like the daggers or spellcasting at all, so I went back and I bought a rapier and I two-handed it. This is literally the weapon I used for the entire game. Fighting my way through this area, I got to the last giant, who was a fight I tried twice. I liked it. I thought it was interesting. I particularly liked the way that you could change your lock on from one leg to the other. I fought the pursuer. This was a much more frustrating fight. I think I died there 3 or 4 times before coming back, realizing that I could parried him, then used the ballista to kill him. That was the end of the first arc. After the pursuer fight, I was burned bound off to the Lost Bastille, which again I took to very methodically. There was lots of bonfire resetting, making sure an area around a bonfire was relatively safe, killing everything I could, going back to Majula, leveling up. I learned the monsters very thoroughly. It wasn't until the Ruined Sentinels that anything in this zone killed me, because I was just that careful. Most of the enemies were in locations that it was easy to examine. You could use walkways to watch how they moved and when they moved. You could also use these to funnel the groups. This is where I met Strayed of Alaphus, and I thought he was super interesting. I enjoyed that he references a time where he was imprisoned by a king who was himself so old that he is lost to this area's history. So he's this kind of 3-step historical artifact of an entity. His statue was obviously moved by someone. Was it moved by Vendrick and Vendrick's people? Was Alaphus older than even Laudrin. We don't know. I was told he sells you stuff. I did not buy any of his stuff. Since I was being so methodical with my fighting, I was also using the torches as a sort of test of where I'd been, and this meant that I approached Sinner's Rise with a torch in hand, and while I was dawdling around, I wound up accidentally lighting up the room with the lost Sinner in it. That fight was fun and interesting, but I understand it's a lot harder if you approach it without having lit it up. So, I don't know. I found that fight fairly engaging, only had to do it 2 or 3 times. At a loss of what to do at that point, I went back to Majula and onward to Heidi. Heidi left me at first with the impression the entities I was seeing were descended from the giants, with all the mention of the giants and the Forest of the Fallen Giants. So I kind of briefly had the thought that they were like half giant, half human creatures. The armor dismisses this idea. There's just nothing to do about that. I did think this maybe meant that the society that was destroyed by the giants was itself the society of the giants, and that at some point there had been like a civil war, or maybe a marginalization of the giants led to the giants pushing back. Turns out that wasn't actually the case, but it was an interesting way to view that area, particularly with the way the architecture was clearly the byproduct of a huge amount of labor. It gave me the idea that there might be something massive that helps them construct all these huge works, even as they slid into the sea. It also raised the question of, did the sea come to this place, or was this place always built in such a precarious location? Heidi was also an experience for these huge, clunky people, guarding what was left of a country as it slid into the ocean. I found it really beautiful. It was a really lovely area. I liked how, once I took out Not Ornstein, the Heidi Knights got up and started hunting for me. That was cool, and that showed that there's some connection there between these people who are otherwise endlessly patient. The Dragon Rider fight was kind of pretty cool, if a little bit slack. I did deal with him in one shot, but I was also pretty well leveled, and I was specializing in counterattacking. Every wide swing he made just got him stabbed in the back a lot, and he does a lot of wide swings. I also liked, again, the use of the environment, making it so you can fight the enemy in a smaller space to bait them into falling, or a larger space to give you more room to breathe. Thought that was pretty cool. I've heard some suggestions that the Dragon Slayer here was Ornstein, and that seems a bit nonsense to me. They use a different magic, the armor is a different color. It seems more likely to me that it was another individual who found the armor Ornstein used to wear, drawings of the armor Ornstein used to wear, and tried to emulate that style, a sort of echoing history without realizing. This was also another chance to discover a covenant, which I ignored. I ignored covenants just like I ignored weapons, and after the starting set, ignored all my sorcery. This isn't that hard a game. You can try things out, and if they don't work for you, you're not missing anything by throwing them away. I felt my way through the tower. I arrived at No Man's Wharf, and that was an interesting experience. I quite liked it. I liked the use of lock-on resistant enemies. I liked the use of the light and the environmental damage, the way that oil and fire could interact. I also liked the big gangly-armed bastards who didn't seem to be human. I liked that there were signs that there was something inhuman in Dranglake. Got to the boss fight with Flexile Sentry. I quite liked that fight, but I did it in one. I think that was in part because I was overpowered and I was being thorough. I used the central pole to avoid engaging the Flexile Sentry directly, and since I'd already fought one on the way to the Sinner's Rise, it wasn't super hard. The next step was to go down to Pit with Shelquar's Ring. I fought the Royal Rat Vanguard, which I thought was an interesting fight, but a touch disappointing. I expected I'd have to deal with a number of rat champions hiding in the mix, rather than one. It was still a neat fight, and I liked the use of the statues and the terrain to make it a bit like a Pac-Man fight. I moved on to the Gutter, which I found interesting and sad. I liked seeing all these hollows trying to build a little home place, trying to build up out of the mess with all that slop and gunk around. I also liked the scope of the place, suggesting that both the area had been very old, but at the same time was getting regular infusions of stuff. You couldn't build with wood in such a wet area without it rotting over time, which means that there was a constant process of development, and that meant that there's a lot more places than just Majula chucking their stuff down there. From there, I fought my way towards the Fog Door for the Rotten, but the Rotten wasn't the important thing. That's where I dealt with two different NPC invasions whose names I really can't remember. I thought it was a sign that I was overleveled, that I was getting these NPC invasions. I kind of figured this was a sign that my soul memory was very high, so I was getting very dangerous things. The first one wrecked me a lot. It was really hard. I didn't find these invasions particularly fun, but when I finally cracked and summoned for one of them, I learned that you can break all the poison statues statues, because he just ran around smashing statues for me, which was super nice of him. And that let me be methodical, clear out the area, summon, then try and deal with the invader. I wound up fighting him to a standstill, killed him, and then, just as I'm getting back to the same location, his brother summons in, like, the same name, just a different surname. He ran towards me. I ducked off an edge to land on a lower ledge to get a chance to drink Estus, and I watched the invader roll over the top of me and fall down, hit to die. So that happened. The Rotten itself is a super interesting boss fight because you have this combination of very dangerous environment and distance. And the Rotten's strikes were just complex enough that it wasn't simple wait, bait, roll, wait, return for a counter. Some attacks took a bit to learn. The Rotten will keep tracking you as you move, so it's not a simple matter of, you know, swing down, stick the cleaver in the ground, and then wait for you to jab away. The Rotten otherwise just died. I, from that point, explored a little bit. I found some of the dead ends in the woods, avoiding those stealth thieves, because I figured I need some tool to make them targetable, which turned out true, but again, was much like the Dead Man's Wharf, another time where the game said, look, don't use lock-on mechanic that can be inappropriate at times, and I thought that was pretty interesting, especially as I started to deal with big things like the ogres, where not locking on is actually the way to move more quickly around them, and after seeing speedrunners take on the Ruin Sentinels, locking on those is really unwise. In the Shaded Woods, I met Rosabeth, who I thought was really cool. I gave her a ridiculous array of random junk from my pockets because I was afraid if I didn't, she'd get hurt. From there, much more butting my head against the wall, and then I found the path to the Huntsman's Copse, which was clearly designed for a lower level group because I smashed it. I did find the Skeleton Lord in this area. I didn't find all the bosses, just the Skeleton Lord, and I thought that it was a really cool fight. I liked that it was a fight with the combination use of environment and enemy choice. So if you liked AoEs, you could drop all three of the bosses real quick and then pump your way through this like cloud of baddies. It reminded me a lot of Painkiller, of moving around a group and trying to herd it into shape and picking off the stragglers around the outside. I can understand if some people were deeply upset by this, but especially in light of not using lock-on inappropriately or knowing where to turn lock-on on and off, that was a super cool fight. I really liked it. Then it was on through to Earthen Peak, and I fought the Covetous Demon, and I've heard other people call that a letdown. I pretty much agree. It was just a great big duh. Yeah, it didn't kill me, it didn't have any particularly interesting or special animations, its environment was kind of boring, but, you know, they can't all be winners. This time I climbed the tower, and I didn't go as thoroughly as I did in your areas. I was getting very tired of that at this point, so instead I just pushed through by attrition to the next bonfire over and over, usually running around enemies once I'd realized the limits of their attacking. Because in most areas of this game, things will stop chasing you after a certain point, so you can fight your way, clear the area, get an idea of what the next area looks like, and then when you die and reset, you just run around and get to the next area and know they won't chase you. I then got to Mytha, and I had to fight her the hard way, which was rough. I learned that there was a trick you could do where you could burn the windmill. This is really interesting to me, because a lot of the complaints I've heard about this is that the windmill part you put the torch to doesn't look like it should burn, but if you look at the windmill itself, like as an object, the bits, the actual arms of the windmill very clearly would burn. So it's like an interesting thing where the game presents you with an object and you have a tool you've been using up to this point so you can interact with that object. But then when you actually execute on that, it looks really weird and silly. I get the impression that there are a lot of people who are really upset that it wasn't more obvious that you could burn the windmill. I mean, I missed it, but I do think it's a bit weird given how many other things in the game up to this point had involved destroying or interacting with the environment in some way, that the poison was not seen as a thing you could do something about. Anyway, I thought Mytha was a really cool fight. I liked that she had such a bigness to her. It meant that all of her gestures and her attacks had a great deal of impact. I thought that the use of her chucking her head as a spell effectively was really cool. I liked the way that she could shift modes between being really strong ranged and really strong melee. I really liked Mytha. I thought she was really cool. I particularly liked the way that she invokes two different myths without getting either of them technically correct. I thought that was a good example of this sort of fusional mashup feeling that Dark Souls had been going for up to this point. At the end of the Earthen Keep, there is a lift that goes upward, and this is apparently a point of storied failure. And lots of people like to bring it up, and that's one of the things I really noticed with the criticisms of Dark Souls 2. It was really two or three of the same things just being repeated over and over again, often with the exact same phrasing, which was a little weird and creepy. I don't really have anything to say about this. I mean, doesn't mean anything necessarily. The world of Dark Souls 1 was a big single coherent object, and that's kind of impressive. That doesn't mean video games have to be designed that way. I mean, have you seen how the world design works in Mario? And hey, in Mario, you can only ever get hit once and die. I mean, you talk about Dark Souls being hardcore. The Iron Keep is where I went back to a very thorough, methodical method of fighting. I took out archers, went back to the bonfire, reset over and over again. This is when I started to try and practice parrying, because I figured this was kind of a thing. It turns out I was not very good at it, and I wound up giving up on it. I just wound up using my heavy stats and stabbing things in the face. I encountered the Smelter Demon, who was the first boss. I didn't bother to, you know, bash my face against endlessly. It just didn't seem interesting. I saw that there were two paths. The Smelter Demon was behind one of them. So I took the other one and figured I'd come back to the Smelter Demon if it wound up being necessary. That's also where I had another encounter with the use of the game's show and tell attitude. It shows you this sequence where you're walking along a path and there is a turtle knight who will just bash the ground to leave a hole in the path for you, which kind of like signals, hey, these turtle knights are capable of breaking floors and influencing the shape of the battlefield, and you can lure them into doing that. And I thought that was really cool. Then I used that later on in the higher in the hanging platforms area where you can get them to smash the ground and fall down through it, which would be cool. I also like there's a bell up at the very top of this area that you can ring for no purpose whatsoever. I kind of love the times where this game lets you invoke Dark Souls 1 and you're kind of expecting something, and the game then just goes, what exactly were you expecting? You know, did you think you'd get a prize for that? The Iron King fight was great fun once I stopped rolling over the edge into the lava. I feel like this fight could have been better if the area around the Iron King was a bit bigger and then he was faster about withdrawing his mitts, because then you'd have a little more variety about where you could go. You could lead his attacks a little better and he wouldn't have those long pauses. Alternatively, you could go with what they did with the Ceaseless Discharge and how he had that very heaving, sick motion, meant he had to pause and hesitate and catch his breath after every attack, which was quite sad and tragic. And I understand the Iron King is kind of just a bit more of a generic Diablo-like Eve bastard. I also really like there is a truly enormous Minotaur statue in this area. Just fucking massive. It continues the trend of this game having access to extra large labor, I guess I'd call it. I then went back to the woods, convinced that it was the next step I had to move on. And from there, I wound up dealing with the shadowy soldiers, the stealth rogues, I guess you'd call them. And again, learning that lock-on was not going to work, which was, you know, a good lesson to learn. And this is where I fought Nashka. Nashka was a great fight. I really liked her, particularly because she, on the one hand, obviously compares to Quelaag, but the fight is super different. In Quelaag's fight, she's a very fast-moving entity who can make areas around the place very inhostile. Who can make her combat arena really hostile and dangerous, whereas Nashka has just ridiculous reach, and she can leap, and she can move really fast, but you don't have to worry about her changing the way the environment works. When she burrows down, you have to find some way to escape her attention, which leads to the use of the stone. It's really cool and interesting, and then you have the areas around, then you have the tree that you can knock down, which again shows more of this use of deforming the environment. I really liked this. I really liked the way that they kind of consistently wove into the games this idea of pay attention to the world you're in and remember that there are objects that can be destroyed and damaged. Next up was Seldora. I don't remember most of this area beyond that the torch again showed really useful, the way that it could be used to scare off spiders. That was pretty cool. And the crawling congregation and the Magus fight. I thought that was really interesting. It also came up a lot in comparisons of like, oh, look how lazy and boring boring they've become. Because I didn't find it bad. Like, there are meh boss fights in every game. I mean, in this one, the Covetous Demon is really meh. But I thought this fight was interesting because you, on the one hand, wanted to use your stamina to clear out the space by rolling through objects. And you, thanks to the weapon degradation system, you couldn't exactly run around smashing every object in the room to make it happen. The congregation themselves take two sets of hits to take out, which was kind of interesting. And you had two different types of ranged artillery. So the whole thing was like one really tightly condensed area in a single fight. Well, I thought that was pretty cool. Just, you know, not that hard. I did do it in my first try. Oh, well. Then it was down fighting Duke's dear Freya. I don't have a lot to say about that spider fight. It's a big bug fight. You know, the games have fights with these great big objects that are capable of controlling a lot of area. That's all Freya was to me. I summoned for her. The ad mostly fought spiders while I fought Freya. Then it was off to Dranglake Castle. And I liked the way that the gate you travel to, the one that can be opened also with soul memory, isn't the gate to Dranglake Castle. It's a shrine to the other area. And it's like sealed off because you need a great power to go there. But because it's meant to be accessible from both the Dranglake path and the path you were on, it means that that path, it manages to represent a second route around the conventional path to Dranglake Castle, which there was no reason that that path should be obscured, but it isn't just an unnecessary, ridiculously arbitrary, powerful gate between these locations with the question of why would anyone set that up. It's set up to seal away the Shrine of Winter, but if you do go through it, and if you have the soul memory to go there, you can wind up coming out the other side and seeing the path to Dranglake. I thought that was a nice touch. I thought that was cool. The two bosses in Dranglake Castle were one and done for me. Again, I'm clearly overpowered. Particularly liked the Dragon Rider fight, because, again, paying attention to the destructible environment and the way that the big guy charges, you could lure him over to the platform that the archer was on, and he'd smash it down. And then you have these two people who are on a much more even footing, and you can, like, poke around them instead of having this unassailable archer. That was really cool. The Mirror Knight's cool use of the shield as a way to summon things as well. I thought that was neat. Lots of things that were very susceptible to the rapier, I get the impression. I wonder if I was using an overpowered weapon. I really didn't like the Shrine of Amana that followed. While I liked the big scale of it, and again, the slightly inhuman monsters, I found the overall experience really frustrating. I almost got fed up. I stopped scrubbing all the areas, and I was severely tempted to go back to doing that. I liked the Demon of Song fight. Particularly, I liked how, like, in a lot of these boss fights in other video games, you've got to wonder why the enemy winds up showing you their obvious weak point. In the case of the Demon of Song, it has this, like, impregnable armor, but it can't really attack you very easily with it. It's limited in the way its body can get at you. So if it pulls its armor closed around it, it's safe, but it can't attack you. If it exposes itself to attack you, it runs the risk of being counterattacked. I thought that was just a really nice use of that very simple expression. I also liked the way that the sound, the song, stopped when it... Then it was onto the crypt, and then Veldstadt. Veldstadt's not hollow, I don't think. In his cutscene, he doesn't look rotten and dead. And if that's the case, then that means he has, by dint of just devotion to his task, been able to hold off the curse of hollowing for that long. That's pretty cool. It's a bit of a shame that you have to kill him, but then I guess that implies that somewhere at his bonfire, he has just come to. After all, he's been guarding Vendrick for a long time. The Vendrick moment, which I don't want to spoil because I thought that it was interesting, then follows. And then it was back to explore all the King's Doors and see what they did. In Aldia's Keep, I quite liked the way that the whole place projected a scientist's explorations of the world around them. More use of the destructible environments with the ogres smashing through walls and being able to. The use of the basilisk surrounded by statues, I thought that was cool. And the obviously evil assassin sitting in his little chamber saying, you know, oh yeah, you could totally free me. That'll be fine. Yeah, I didn't do anything with him. I avoided him. Then there was the dragon in that area, which I fought. And I took it out in one. Then I took the lift up into the sky, and I got to see the floating sky castle surrounded dragons. At this point, I was really getting fed up with the length of the game. Not that the game was too long, but that I was not happy with the amount of time I was spending with the game. So instead of fighting my way through it, and again, being very Thara, I just bolted through the whole shrine up to the end, figuring that there'd be a fog door I could walk through. Turns out there isn't. There's just a boss who you don't have to fight. And then I was off. So I left the dragon shrine relatively unscathed. You know, I think fondly of the people there. Then I go back to the Forest of the Fallen Giants and explored all these histories that the Ashen Memory let you do. And this was super cool. I really liked that you could go back and see the ways that the kingdom changed in that massive climactic battle. I really liked the cinema of watching the rolling head smashing its way through a whole bunch of giants. I thought that was cool. I think that this giant that you cut, that you killed, Yekt, I think it is, I think that's the same guy as the last giant. I think that that's why he was easy for them to subdue and capture him after this incident, because you went back in time and took away his soul, which meant that he was suddenly weak and was capable of being restrained, hidden away underneath the forest. But maybe that's not the case. I don't know. I do think it's kind of cool that both this giant has a longsword and the last giant tears off its arm to wield like a longsword. That kind of suggests a sort of military point, and also a very different view of bodily integrity, I guess. After getting all the souls, I went to Throne of Wand, fought the Throne Guardians. They were probably the hardest boss fight for me. Took me a lot of tries. Once I got them down, I got hit by the final boss immediately, completely wiped out, and then I came back in and I got her on the second try, because I had at that point been really, really thoroughly overpowered by just, you know, ridiculous amount of souls and plus 10 everything that I had. Because, you know, if you're not going to change your weapons, it doesn't matter how much Tidemite you have to farm. And then the credits rolled. I really enjoyed this game. I thought it was a really excellent little Dark Souls game. I particularly liked the way that it used both dissonance and assonance. There was a lot of stuff in the game. It was very much like Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 1, but also very much not. There was a wrongness to the whole experience. There are little touches like, I've had it pointed out to me, the Lord Vessel chunks that are down in the basement, this sort of discarded nothing. The fact that the only thing that really intact survived from the first game is the Praise the Sun Covenant, which is kind of nice because it's like the sun is the only enduring symbol, and that also means that Solaire has in some way continued on in the culture. That's really lovely for a person who is so afraid of not living up to the standards of the sun. I really like the way that the mythology just didn't give a shit about Dark Souls 1. Like, you wanted explanations for more of this stuff back in Dark Souls 1? Nah, it's not here, mate. Don't bother. And I really like the presence of the inhuman entities, the lion ball, the statues hinting the minotaur and the elephant. I understand it's possible those are the byproducts of the apothecary in Aldia's keep, and that's where Najka and Manhunter Taric, I think it is, Manscorpion Taric, are from, but I don't know if I buy that. I feel like that might be a too simple an explanation, and the world is too deliberately ambiguous. When you have the big old frog things, which were not clearly the byproduct of a person, it seems unwise to assume that everything weird is the byproduct of a person. So it painted a very different story than Dark Souls 1. I really liked it. I thought Dark Souls 2 was a great game, and I definitely recommend anyone who's enjoying this kind of game to give it a shot.